Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Soul Sisters. This is Jessie Katz here with my co-host Dara Golub and an awesome guest today. Her name is Jen Wassner. You might very well know her from the band White Oak. She also has a new solo project called Flock of Dimes. She's put out some stuff under that name before, but she has a brand new first ever LP under Flock of Dimes coming out this month, and it is super rad. She wrote and played on and sang all the songs. By played on, I mean she plays every instrument in every song on this album. And when you hear it, you will be even more impressed than you are just hearing me say that, because it's a phenomenal album. She's super talented. She just had a guitar named after her, which we got to see in the studio. She played two songs for us off of the new album, and I couldn't even believe what I was hearing watching her perform by herself in the studio. She sounds like a full band just playing by herself. She's really awesome, really inspiring, has great things to say about being a woman in the industry and being such a self-sufficient, self-starter artist who's trying to stay true to herself, but, you know, also sell her stuff. And she talks about the dichotomy of that and how it's hard to do both of those things at the same time sometimes. Anyway, so really great episode. Really excited to share it with you guys. So let's get to it. Jen Wassner on Soul Sisters.
Yeah, we did a show at LPR last night.
Oh, lovely.
It was really fun. But you know,
did you play any piano like that?
I actually played guitar and sang. I mostly just sing with those things.
Because as you were playing just now, this like very fancy classical kind of thing.
Debussy,
there you go.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a little Debussy. I was thinking, like, do you imagine ever playing music like that on one of your projects?
Mm.
Or have you? And I don't realize.
Well, I took classical piano lessons for years when I was a kid, but I never really got serious about it, mostly because, well, there are a few reasons. A, halfway through my career as a young classical pianist, I started playing guitar and that kind of took over. And I was like, I can learn songs that I know from the radio.
Yeah, but clearly you sit down and you're like,
well, I can't. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, I was kind of faking it a little bit, to be honest with you. But I did learn. Actually, I took some time in the past few years when I was going through one of my writer's block phases. One of the things that I did was I learned a bunch of pieces. I learned that Debussy piece. I learned some Satie, just to be like focused on playing music that isn't egocentric, that isn't about just like, how am I gonna get my ideas down on paper and me and all about myself, and just to like have something that's consuming the musical side of my brain and is challenging but has nothing to do with me. So that's like a classic go-to trick for me when I hate the sound of my own voice inside of my head, and just be like, work on this thing.
That's
for a
very useful go-to sort of like relaxation, refocusing tool, as opposed to like being like, I don't even want to look at music. I don't want to look at an instrument. I can't handle that. It's like daunting right now. It's too much. You say, no, I'm just going to focus on other types of music that aren't about me and my work.
Absolutely.
That's nice.
I mean, it's a great trick. It's worked really well for me. And even I do it all the time when I'm writing and I have, you know, I have my setup going and I'm trying to like work on a song or produce something or make it sound good. And if I just get tired of it and I get to that point where the magic is dead, I'm like, all right, I'm going to work on learning this song by this person. And it gets you back in that state of mind where you're excited about music again and you're still doing something you're working on skills that you can use in service of your own thing, but you're not like, oh, I hate myself and my ideas are terrible.
Yeah.
Right.
But that looks like it's blowing your mind.
It's blowing my mind. I mean, it's like, I think it's one of the
You're
keys.
You're shaking your head.
I'm just, it's one of the keys to being a professional musician is not hating practicing.
Oh man, it's
not,
huge,
you know, and like it not being this like horrible chore to sit down and work on something that's hard and repetitive,
yeah,
and something that's not creative necessarily. It's like, yeah, and it sounds like that was probably you from a very young age,
yeah,
and that's still you now. And I think that's just the key in a way.
Well, you never get better at writing songs in that, like, so much of it is magic and chance and weird stuff that's out of your control and intuition. The only thing you can get better at, and the only thing that I've been able to get better at, is putting yourself in a position to get to that point. But it's all, like, you can improve at the tricks, like, all the tricks that surround the making of the process, but then the actual inspiration,
yeah,
and the result, well, is kind of out of your control.
You mean you can't get better, you can't control getting better.
You can't control getting better.
Yeah.
You can't, like, if, I mean, because I
can't will
be,
it to happen.
Yeah, you can't, like, sometimes the more you want it to happen, the less likely
it is to happen.
Yeah, so it's all about, like, all right. You know, like for example, like when I'm at home and I'm working on trying to write and I don't have to be like out on tour and doing other stuff,
mm-hmm,
I'll be like, okay, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to go for a walk, and then I'm going to work on music from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Yeah.
And in that time, I probably go back and forth between, you know, practicing instruments, working on songs of my own. But you have to kind of like, you set yourself up for success, but you can't have any expectations that anything's going to come out of it. And that's why it's really weird, frustrating work, because, you know, it's not like most things where you put in X amount of time, you get this guaranteed output of something to show for yourself. You can do that
with
for
songwriting.
Weeks.
You're talking,
yeah, about. With songwriting, it's like you can do that for weeks and have nothing that's worth keeping, and then, you know, pretty much resign yourself to the idea that you'll never make another thing for as long as you live, and then the next day, all of a sudden a song will just magically materialize.
Yeah.
But all that work that you did in advance of that is what makes that happen. So, I mean, I guess that's what it comes down to, is like, you can't will inspiration, you can't will creativity, but you can get better at putting yourself in a position to capitalize on it.
Right.
Right.
So.
And with instruments, you can
sit
down and practice for,
yeah,
an X amount of hours, yeah, for 1,000 hours, yeah, and you're going to get better at drums. So you taught yourself drums in,
yeah,
the past year. It took you like
a
year before you put them on your album and you played them?
So I'm not, okay, I'll be clear. I'm not a good drummer. I'm not really good, really good at anything. I would say I'm probably a good singer. But as far as like pure chops goes, I'm not like, I have a lot, a good ear and good feel, but I'm not like a super shredder on pretty much,
okay,
anything.
But when you pick something up for the first time, it feels, there's an intuition there that you understand how to begin and how to like work on it. I mean, like if I picked up a guitar, I wouldn't really know what to do.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. And I think you're right. I think it's easy for me to underestimate. Like I only can see and experience the world through my weird body and frame of reference and experience. And so music does, I think I have a real natural sense for music. It's one of, I understand it on an intuitive level, and you know, it just makes sense to me in a lot of ways. So yeah, I think I have more of a starting point for teaching myself things than someone, maybe just the average lay person would. But I don't think of myself that way. I just, you know, I also think I have a tendency to approach instruments with a no rules policy. And if something sounds good to me and is working, I don't really think about whether it's the right way to do it or not.
Is that easier for you to do when you're doing a solo project?
It's easier. I mean, mm-hmm, it's kind of been the only way for me, because
okay,
I teach myself everything that I do. I'm relatively self-taught, with the exception of those early piano lessons that, uh-huh, I largely abandoned.
Right.
So
you didn't even do guitar lessons?
Never.
Okay.
Nah,
wow.
I've never taken any lessons really on anything.
And you have a guitar named after you.
I know. So take that, world.
That's right.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's all, I mean, I guess that's one of the beautiful things about the guitar though, is that it is such a malleable, mm-hmm, instrument. It's so easy for people to make it their own, personalize it. But you know, I mean, but one of the things that's been so cool about this, you know, these playing with these symphony musicians that I mentioned I did last night, the first time I did that, I've done it probably 4 or 5 times with different sizes of ensembles and different players. And the first time I did it, I remember it was with the Alabama Symphony. So, you know, my bandmate in Wyoak, Andy, and I were kind of had no idea what to expect. And it's very intimidating to walk into a room with 70 musicians. And they're, you know, heavy hitters,
classically like trained
players,
right.
You know, like, and what they do is mind boggling to me. And I, you know, I was expecting to really have to prove myself, and I was very intimidated by it. But in pretty much every one of these groups and these situations, people have been very supportive, encouraging, and very impressed by what I do, which was not what I was expecting. I was expecting them to be, oh, you're just a pop singer, like, you know, you know. But it's been, my experience has been just the reverse. I've had such a positive experience working with people who come at music from a very, very different mm-hmm. world, but who are like very appreciative of the way in which I approach it.
Yeah.
And I'm, that's, you know, so cool. It's like a really cool give and take of me, like, I can't do what you do and you can't do what
I do. It's like how every actor wants to be a rock star and every rock star wishes yeah. that they were an actor.
Yeah.
You know,
well, yeah.
That mutual respect and admiration.
It's so easy to, like I was saying, to downplay the things that come naturally to you yeah. and to idolize and idealize.
And to compare one to one and say these musicians are better or
worse,
whatever,
yeah.
right? But you put your own unique signature on how you
yeah.
play, and that's
yeah.
it's cool that they saw that. And
yeah. It just helps me to trust myself a lot.
Totally.
To trust the abilities that I do have, because they haven't let me down yet, even though I don't necessarily have like the background and skills that a lot of these people do, so...
I want to talk about that awesome essay that you wrote for Medium.
Heck yes.
About your guitar. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, oh, I'm going to pull out a quote and ask her about it. And then there are like five things that I pulled out.
Sweet.
I pulled out a few too.
Yeah. I'm pumped. Yeah. That's great.
It was amazing. Okay,
thank you for reading it. I really wanted people to read that. It was
so great.
A little backstory.
Yeah. Okay. So Reverend Guitars created this fucking awesome guitar that was designed by a friend of yours. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so the guitar itself is based on the guitar that Reverend built that I've been playing for years.
Okay.
It's a Charger.
Did you have a relationship with them? Or?
Yes. Okay. I've been playing their guitars for a long time, and I love their guitars. And they actually, the first Reverend that I got years ago was Jetstream, and they reached out to me. They saw a picture of me playing it, and they were like, hey, you play our guitars. That's really cool. And I was like, yeah, I love them. They're great. And they were like, let's give you some. And I was like, yes. Cool. Yes, please. So I've been playing their guitars for years, and then they've started doing these signature models somewhat recently, and they asked me if I wanted to do one, and I was all about it.
Are you the first woman that they've done that for?
As far as I know, I don't know for sure that that's true, but I think so.
I mean, you're probably one of the first women that any guitar maker has ever
There are, named aren't many. I know, I think Bonnie Raitt's got one, and I think, there are a handful, but yeah, it's
okay,
definitely,
so you're an esteemed
it's
company.
heavily skewed
yeah.
right, towards the penis having
right.
Side. Of the musical world.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
How unusual.
But so they reached out to me, and at the time I was in the middle of working on the initial planning stages of what will become this Flock of Dimes record that I've got coming out. And
yeah, by the way, to put everything in context.
Yeah,
right.
We just jumped in. We got no intro.
Out a little.
No, yeah. Like
who the hell is this lady? Just walked in and started
we'll
playing
add an
your
intro to this to explain.
Yeah.
But you have a fucking great new album that's coming
so
out.
So great.
September.
So great.
It's so good.
Oh my gosh.
You wrote all the songs, you played all the instruments.
Yeah, I did.
Which explains how much conversation
largely
we
produced
had.
It.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
It was a sick video. It's really.
Yeah. So it's a big
really
moment
exciting
for you.
Project.
Oh man, yeah. I'm so glad you guys like it.
Oh, it's dope.
So good.
You can't see this now, podcast listeners, but I'm smiling.
Yes,
I'm so
smiling.
Pumped. Yeah,
anyway,
it's a very happy
record.
Like,
it took me forever. I'm so proud of it. It finally exists. I cried when my manager handed me the final copy of it. I hadn't seen the vinyl until yesterday, and I was in the middle of an interview, and I like started sobbing, and the poor girl was like, oh, are you okay? like I'm fine.
Is it your first vinyl? Have other projects had vinyl?
I mean, I have like, I have seen records before.
No, you're not.
It's like, what is this?
This is what they've been talking about at Urban Outfitters.
But it was the first time I had seen my record.
Right.
In person.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, so it took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting to react to it so strongly, but I did. Sure
yeah,
did.
You should.
That was the first record of your solo project, Flock of Dimes.
Yes, that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Ever
put
seen.
Put out songs yeah. here and there.
Oh, yeah. But it was the
first LP.
It was this record. And this record has been such it's taken me. I've worked longer and harder on this record. And it's the only record I've ever made in this way.
Yeah.
So
and it paid off.
I hope so. We'll
I mean,
see.
This is true.
Jerry's out.
True solo. It sounds like to me versus. I don't know. I mean, right. Like Wyoak is certainly
it's a collaboration.
Duo.
It's an equal.
It's
part
a collaboration.
Absolutely.
But,
yeah.
I mean, when you're writing. Playing everything practically
can't be
and
more solo
producing
than that.
It doesn't get more than that.
Well, yeah, and you know, I should mention that there are at least two really, really wonderful, talented collaborators that I worked on this record that I couldn't have done it without them. My friend Mickey Freeland, who I work with, is from Baltimore, and my friend Aaron Roche, who is from here and who I played with in the symphony at the symphony show last night. But you know, it was. Largely, I would say the vast majority of it is me. And I did set out initially with this sort of unrealistic expectation that I was going to play and produce every single inch of this goddamn record. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I don't, as a woman in music, you have to earn the benefit of the doubt. You don't get the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people I encounter I've been playing music somewhat professionally at like a medium popular level for like a decade.
Right.
And there are still people that I encounter that just assume that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And being a partner
with a guy in a band, they probably defer to him a lot of the time, right?
Yeah. So I'll tell you this story. Yeah. This is just the last tour we did just like maybe a month ago. Uh-huh. And I was playing a show and I was setting up my stuff. And, you know, an older guy came up and was checking out my pedals, asking me questions about my pedals, which is fine, you know. And I was answering them while I was setting up. And eventually he was just like, so do you like pick out all of your pedals or like do you have like a guy that does that for you? Literally, I was like, are you kidding me right now? Like,
I don't know why it's still surprising, but that is a good one.
I mean,
wow.
Like how, why, you would never... ask.
Do you have a girl pick
that.
Out those pedals for
no
you?
No one would ever do that.
Do you have a chick? Do
and
that.
You know, the sad thing was, like, so I laughed. I kind of laughed in his face. Right. And yeah. He was embarrassed. And then I felt bad. And I was like, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be mean. But you have to understand that this is an extremely offensive question. And I could tell, as I said that, he hadn't
heard himself say it.
Yeah.
And was like,
it hit him then. And he was like, oh. But it's incredible that, like, it's if you don't ever confront those ideas... that you can just be going through life not even realizing how much the way you think about other people has been shaped culturally.
Yeah, right.
And so it was, you know, it was kind of cool in a way to be like, to point that out and be like, think about why you think the things that you think.
That's
and why you say the things that you say.
Yeah.
That sounds like the reason why you sort of accepted the signature guitar. It's that, mm-hmm. I read that you sort of had trepidation about it because you're like, this is not sort of the vibe that I go for, the sort of showy, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Me, mm-hmm. Look at me. But that if you had the opportunity to sort of confront this issue, and so that it was worth it.
Yeah, that was what it came down to because
aside
it
from
did
it being dope.
It yes, I mean I got it to match my outfit, I mean, so like that's cool, right? But like no, I mean it was a big part of it. I mean I really do think I try and remember with the decisions that I make in my career, like what I would. Want to have projected to me if this was you know the other way around and I was a young female musician aspiring musician, like what do I want to see out there in the world reflected back to me? And you know, I love talking to people about this because I like to remind people that a lot of things that I do aren't things that necessarily come naturally to me, and they're not things that you are told as a woman that you can do or supposed to be able to do. You're not encouraged to learn to do. And, you know, a lot of the learning how to produce and record and all that stuff is not, it's not something you're just born knowing how to do. And it's tough to get into it. There's a stiff, you know, entry curve with mm-hmm. it. And it's tough, but it's also just, it's doubly tough because no one expects you to be able to know how to do it, and no one really is encouraging you to do it, and so you have to fight twice as hard. So that's, I mean, that's something that's important to me, like putting the guitar out there and like putting myself out there as a solo performer and just being like, here is what I am capable of.
Right. But I mean, it sounds like you did get the recognition very quickly. Like it can take a lot of time, and you've been doing this now for about 10 years or more, but you were recognized through Y Oak really quickly. Like, you put out your first record and then you were signed a year later, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it happened when I was 19. It was very fast. And, you know, that band is a huge, has been and continues to be a huge part of my life. And
you just put out a record with them too.
As Y Oak. Andy and I put out a record in June. So I've got two records coming out this year.
Yeah. I mean, so how does that feel like?
I'm just hanging out. Like,
like both simultaneously?
Yeah.
Wow.
The Tween was like, Tween, the Y Oak record is sort of like a mishmash of older stuff that you repurposed.
It's old stuff and new stuff. It was sort of, you know, we made a record in 2011 called Civilian, and that was sort of a moment for us. It kind of took off for, you know, no one can really predict how certain things. I mean, we had made records before that. You just never really know what's gonna hit and what isn't. Mm-hmm. But we also toured. We played like 220 shows in a year, and like we were grinding on that one pretty hard. And so that one, you know, that sort of like opened
up. You had like TV spots and
It was like things sort of took off for us around then. And then I learned a lot about what I want from a career in music that year. And I consider that experience to be extremely, just utterly invaluable. Like, it was just so important to me to have a sense of what I'm looking for with my career and to make decisions accordingly.
So just to set the stage at that point, it's 2011. Mm-hmm. You have songs in, or is it one song, Civilian, mm-hmm. was in Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I had no idea it was going to be such a thing until it happened. And then all of a sudden,
I mean,
like,
did you have someone
thing.
Pitch, you had like someone working on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we would get stuff like that from time to time. Like, hey, this seems fine. You know, this isn't offensively bad. Like, you know, throw that, you know.
Wait, you
not?
Weren't like, holy shit. This
I had no idea. No
to be
clue.
On an AMC show, have a song. No, that didn't.
Dude,
like.
I wasn't. It wasn't even on the radar. I was like, yeah, sure, okay. And then I just forgot all about it until it happened, and all of a sudden my phone started blowing up with like a zillion texts. And I also think like sometimes not all TV spots are created equal. Like sometimes it'll just be like two characters talking, and your song's like in a bar, like, and it's barely audible.
Sure, right.
And then like a lot of the times you could watch the show and never even notice. But this was
a
very
trailer, right?
Spot. It was like a spotlight kind of feature, like almost a full song. And I didn't know. I mean, there were a lot of factors contributing to that year being a big year
and
for that,
Bio. You were named Best Album by AV Club.
Yeah, which is cool.
I mean,
did that make a tangible difference to you?
Everything kind of, it was one of those situations where everything kind of came together.
Yeah.
And I also think it's easier to do that when you're breaking through and everyone's like, for the first time, everyone's hearing about what you do and everyone kind of is like, oh, this thing, you know, and it's much harder to do that, to have that kind of like zeitgeisty moment when you've been around for a while.
Yeah.
But that was like our little, hey, we're breaking through in the scene, whatever moment. And yeah, I learned a lot about myself in that year, because a lot of what that meant for me is repetition, exhaustion, just running myself into the ground. I mean, I mean, not to sound ungrateful, because it was very, I mean, it's probably the reason why I'm sitting here today.
Yeah.
But, you know, it made me realize that a lot of being a successful musician at a very high level is more about marketing and selling a very specific image of yourself, and not necessarily being creative and trying new things, but more just like figuring out what you are and just like
nailing
that message to the wall repeatedly. And so it came down to where I was like, okay, do I want to be an artist, or do I want to like play an artist on TV? You know what I mean? Like, do I want to pretend?
Well, you wrote about that in that essay about your guitar.
Yeah.
You said marketing your music to the public is like playing a real life game of telephone.
Yeah.
And how all of your ideas have to get kind of hammered down into one digestible thing.
Pick that one out too. I love that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Yeah. But you have to do it now. You have a new album out, so you're at it again. But so how do you make that work for you?
Well, it sounds like it makes sense. So if in 2011 you're like, this, like, I'm gonna either have to be this creative artist or someone who like just like nails myself to this one sort of identity,
right?
That's when you decided to sort of start Flock of Dimes.
Yeah.
So you were like, okay, I can have this project, but I can also be other things.
Yes. Well, there's different kinds of artistry. I mean, I think a lot of people I know, the image and the performance is a part of their art, and so it's more satisfying for them. Whereas for me, I'm not as good at that and I'm not as interested in that. I just want to make as many songs as possible and I want to do as many different sounding things as possible. I want to work with as many different people as possible. That's a harder thing to sell. It's tough. It's a tough one. Uh-huh. And I already have, I think, a reputation. It's like, oh, you have all those bands. Like, why do you do that? And even with the symphony stuff, it's like, given the opportunity, I really want to push up against the ceiling of what I'm comfortable with, mm-hmm. and what I've done before. And that's why I wanted to be a musician and an artist in the first place. So, you know, it's less for me about being, you know, operating at like a super successful level, which I think in and of itself is a burden in some ways. Mm-hmm. For me, I realized around then that the goal and where I would be the happiest would be to find that elusive middle ground where you have enough resources to do the things you want to do without being hindered by anything. And you can live, but mm-hmm. no more. Because right. the bigger it gets, the more it gets, it becomes this like slow moving beast where like you can't actually take risks and be creative. You just right. have to keep giving people what they expect from you over and over again.
Yeah. To quote you again, yeah. you call that
yes, quote me.
the humble hustle approach to art making.
Yeah, man.
You got that one too.
That's my MO. It.
Like some, yeah. some weird like bar yeah.
That's really funny.
That's my MO, man. I love it. You I guys love that medium mm-hmm. piece so much. I really
that was awesome.
It was such a good thing to get off my chest. I really was happy that people read it
because yeah this piece is basically everything we're talking about.
Yeah. it's everything I think about, man. It's like you have to make decisions actively all the time to shape your career into what you want it to be. And you know, I think when we first started, I didn't even think about that stuff. And in the music industry, it's people's nature to just be like, bigger is better. Yeah. Everyone wants to just get bigger, 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 more. And I at a certain point, like when Civilian hit and after the few years following that, it was like, no, I want to take a step back.
Yeah, you could have gone, you could have done like, the opposite move and say, all right, Y-Oak has this buzz.
Yeah.
We have this momentum going. Yeah. Let's like roll with that and ride that. But so you sort of felt the opposite.
Has that caused friction between you and your team at any point?
Not with my bandmate.
Right.
He and I are like fortunately super on the same page with what we want from our band and what makes us happy and feel fulfilled. Creatively.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it rules. I mean, we've been friends for 15 years. We've been in a band together for a decade.
Is he playing music and other...
He does all kinds of stuff. I mean, he has an incredible solo project of his own. He plays with tons of people. He's played in... He's one of those guys that, like, everything I do, he does, like, 10 times better. Legit. Like, maybe I'm a better singer. Sorry, Andy. But, like...
Songwriter.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter. I mean, he's a songwriter, too. I mean, he does everything, and he's super skilled at every instrument
That's
he plays.
Amazing.
We also just have a working relationship that it's a vocabulary, a musical vocabulary that there's no substitute for just the history of that over years and years. We've played together for so long. I mean, it's the kind of thing where you can be in a room and be like, and so I want this part to just be kind of like... You know, and he's like, yeah. And
then it just make a face.
Yeah. And you're like, yeah. You know, and he's like, yeah, totally. And then it's just, it's that kind of like almost unspoken.
And then, and it's incredible that you both are on the same page when you're like, we're going to work on a project. Then we're not going to work on a project. And it's fine.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I mean, when I said team, I was thinking less him like, and more management.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard. It's harder to explain. I mean, we're lucky in that like our, you know, the people that we work with, we've been very careful to work with people who we trust, who understand that side of our personalities and who understand that, you know, not all careers and not all ambitions are created equal. And it, there, sometimes people are just like, oh, you're being classic crazy. Like a lot of people who think I'm
like temperamental flaky, artists,
flaky, unpredictable, but you know, that's not my fucking concern.
No. And that's so unfair because that's only even relevant or logical in the context of you being a musician in one project.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you're like, I'm a musician.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call this project this and call this this. But, and I mean, of course, for packaging purposes and just like fan, you know, ease, you need to like name things, but you really want to make music of all kinds and you're a musician. And
that's
so,
what I do. That's
right.
What
and
I care about.
I think that's very unusual for artists. Like to come around and just say like, I'm just going to make this and you have to roll with me to that and that.
And it's freeing because, you know, not everyone has to like everything that I do. You can kind of come in, you can take what you like, you can leave what you don't. It's
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot, maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Not, that's just, I'm past the point of trying to satisfy other people with the things that I make, because that is a dead end. Yeah. It is a creative dead end. And it you know, I guess the way I think about it is that everybody whose job it is to like promote and sell music, and God bless those people, they're the reason why I have a life, like thank you to them for teaching me how to be a person, but they want the thing that you make, they need the thing that you make. Mm-hmm. But I have to be a certain kind of in a certain kind of space personally. I have to feel good about it. I have to you have to like unwrap these layers around yourself and really like get vulnerable, get uncomfortable. Like it is hard. You can't set up any kind of blocks between you and the things that scare you and the things that you're excited about and the things that you're intimidated by and the things that hurt you. You know, it's like, it's a really vulnerable, intense, personal, weird, unpredictable process, you know? And that is one part of who I am. And then to have to sort of do a 180 and all of a sudden have to be stone cold and like uncaring about those things,
yeah.
Which is sort of like, it's like being two different people at once. Yeah. I mean, yeah. you have to be a certain kind of person in a certain kind of place to make the thing. And then you have to be the opposite person to sell the thing.
Right.
And sometimes people, they just want you to make it and then also, and just not be that person, not be that vulnerable person. It's like, you don't understand. Like if you want the things that I make, this is who I have to be.
This is yeah. the person
this
that
is
I am. The artist.
I care about it. I, you know, like these decisions are not based on frivolity and like they're happening for a reason, because if I don't feel good about it, then the songs aren't going to happen. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, such another beautiful part of what you have sort of out right now is this letter from your friend describing
Rachel, yeah.
the new project.
Yeah, shout out to Rachel Monroe.
It's the best press release.
Thanks.
Like I was showing, yeah, it's Thanks. Just, it's beautiful.
It's real, man. Rachel's a dear friend and she's the most talented writer. Seriously, look her up on and just read anything she's ever written. Rachel Monroe.
So good.
She's such a good writer.
So the new record called If You See Me Say Yes is sort of about what you just talked about. And was the decision to move to North Carolina and sort of go through this new beginning while looking back and sort of evaluating where you are in a given moment and what you have to be to different people and just who you are. Was the decision to go to North Carolina born out of like needing this sort of haven of creativity and ability to do this without all of the other stuff around?
100%. I mean, I was born in Baltimore. My family's there. The vast majority of my friends are there. Creatively, the scene that has unfolded over the past decade in Baltimore has shaped who I am tremendously, and so many of my favorite artists and people still live there. But making any kind of art requires a lot of space, alone time, just mm-hmm. being alone with your thoughts and yourself. It requires a huge amount of that, especially, you know, now that I have two projects that I'm trying to pull the weight for and write songs for and like make things for. It's like I have to have that space. I have to have that time. But living in Baltimore is overwhelming because there's so much cool shit happening mm-hmm. everywhere all the time. And mm-hmm. there's so many distractions, and they're great distractions. Everything's, I want to be involved in all of it. But at a certain point, I just felt like the thing that I was always saying no to was myself and mm-hmm. my work and just being alone.
Yeah.
And so I had, I also have some good friends in North Carolina, and I was spending some time down there after going on tour. I was on tour with a band called Sylvanesso, and I was staying at their house, and I was like, hey, your neighborhood's really nice. It's like in the woods and just really peaceful. And they're like, hey, well, you know, the house next door is for rent. You should check it out. And I impulsively was like, yes, this is what I'm doing.
Are we talking about Asheville?
It's actually in between Durham. It's technically in Durham, but it's between Durham and Chapel Hill, sort of in the woods a little bit.
A lot of cool people down there.
It's great. Yeah.
Like great university town. And
yeah. I mean, it's perfect for me right now because, you know, where I live is sort of removed, very peaceful and serene and mm-hmm. rural in some ways, but it's close to a city and a town. So like amenities, I don't have to sacrifice like people and places and things to do and good food and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's also, you know, 5 hours from Baltimore. So I go up there about once a month and dip in and mm-hmm. I still feel very much like a part of that. But it just is, it sort of says no for me. Like uh-huh. I'm alone. I live alone in a house. It's awesome.
Is it awesome?
I hate telling people from New York how much, I'm not going to say it on a podcast, but like when I tell people how much I pay to live in a house, a 3-bedroom house by myself, they get really mad. So sorry, New Yorkers.
Oh, it hurts.
Tough.
Yeah, I know.
It's tough.
I'm from Ohio and
it's tough. Yeah.
Could live in a mansion.
Yeah. 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 No, it's hard. I mean, you know, there are trades because living here is awesome too. It's an incredible place. There's nowhere else like it. But
it drains.
Talk about
you.
Distraction. I mean, talk about not having time to yourself.
Yeah. It's a low level panic attack being here 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, is that why?
It's that's not you. It's what happens. It's what happens. Yeah. I almost lived here at one point in my life. I was thinking about coming and spending some time, and then I bailed because I was just like, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I have the. Have what it takes. I've always lived in places like Baltimore and North Carolina where I can have a really, really high standard of living for very little money. Mm-hmm. And I think that's for a lot of artists, that's like a big part of where they choose to live. And it's been cool for me, I gotta say. Living alone is awesome. And now I feel like I'm spoiled and I'll never go back. But it's great. I have, you know, so I have more time and space. I can wake up in the middle of the night and play piano and no one will know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do. Mm-hmm. And it's great.
You didn't record the record in your house.
Some of it
you?
I did.
Okay.
It was kind of piecemeal all over the place. You know, I went into a studio in Baltimore and did a lot of the like tracking of instruments there. That's where I recorded the drums. But you know, it's a kind of record where like I recorded me playing kit drums, for example. And then I took those and I actually like chopped them up and synthesized them with synthetic drum sounds and like rearranged them and programmed a sort of like live hybrid synthetic drum sound. Like I was trying to create a universe where it was both and neither, where it was both real instruments and synthetic instruments kind of cohabitating in the same space.
Were your collaborators big in terms of the production after you have this initial concept and you sort of get it down? Did they help? Because the sound is very lush and big and mm-hmm. there's a lot of electronic elements and synthesizers and all that stuff. And I mean, was there a period of time that you were teaching yourself that intensely? Because that, like learning that computer, you know, all of those things are a whole other instrument, you know? It's like...
It's the biggest instrument.
Right.
It drives me nuts that people who don't know what they're talking about are just like, you're just making music with a computer. It's just like, you have no idea.
Oh my gosh, no.
What goes into learning how to be fluent making music this way. It is the ultimate to end all ultimates.
Yeah.
Right.
It is.
So does that feel, is that like the way that you sit down at the piano and just learn Debussy? Are you like, I'll just sit at the computer and learn
right now? It's a terrible, I hate it. It's not my favorite way. It was an essential skill that I had to force myself to learn that I don't, like, it's not like I'm like, oh boy, I can't wait to see. I don't really know anyone who, like, even my friends who, like, that is like their thing, they're still just like, I stared at a computer screen all day today. Like, it's a necessary evil in some ways.
Like, you knew you wanted that sound for this album.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I knew that there was no way to avoid learning those skills if I wanted to create the kind of, if I wanted to realize the ideas that mm-hmm. I have.
On your own, because you yes. could have communicated them
yes.
to other people.
Which is what I've done in the past. But I, you know, I want to be able to do it myself. And it's important to me to get better. There's still like major gaps in my knowledge of this stuff. And I think the thing that really started me down this road was I realized, okay, this, if I'm going to treat this like I treat every other instrument, I'm just going to dive in and mess around with it until it sounds good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the guitar, I never picked it up and was like, what am I allowed to do with this?
Right.
I think with producing, engineering, recording, there's a certain like assumption that there's like a base level of skills that you need to know to like even be able to touch it. You know, it's right. like, it's like, and my friend Mickey, who has taught me a lot of this stuff and who has, who I worked with on this record, you know, at a certain point he was just like, you're not going to break it. Just like get in there,
yeah,
like press some buttons and right. see what happens. I was like, oh yeah, I can just do that just like anything else.
What do you use?
Well, I it's a combination of, right now I use a combination of Pro Tools and Ableton and Reaper and just kind of like different stuff for different things depending on what it is. You know, I've used Pro Tools the longest. I'm starting to get more and more into the Ableton world, but you know, it just, you know, whatever it whatever the situation requires.
Right.
And I'm, like I said, there's still major holes in my understanding. There's still a lot of stuff that I have left to learn. I am a very, a particular kind of learner where it's like, it's easier for me to be hands-on and to have someone show me something or to just like learn it through making something as opposed to just like reading the words in a manual. I have a hard time like jumping clearing the space between just words and a page and actually doing something. So I learned slow in a lot of ways with that stuff. But I do think I have like, I rely just like with everything, I rely a lot on my ear and my musical intuition to figure it out.
Have you been doing this kind of production since like 2012 when you started this Flock of Dimes?
That was like when I released the first couple singles for this, that was when I started learning a lot of this stuff. I mean, I've always had like a general rough studio fluency. I was never the one like actually engineering, but I had an understanding of how music, I mean, I've made records since I was young. So with the first couple Wyoke records, my bandmate Andy was much more involved in the mixing and the production. But I've always had like, even if I'm not actually the one hands-on doing it, I've always had a sort of basic understanding of that process. Mm-hmm. It's more about just like taking control over it for the first time for myself. And learning how to have more, more control over actually realizing my own ideas as opposed to having to work through someone else to do that.
Right. Have you worked out the live show for?
There's a lot of different. So one of the things I'm excited about this project is that there's a lot of different versions of these songs, that will exist. I have a solo live show that I do that's very much more like Ableton electronic, me playing instruments, and you know, that's one way of doing it. Mm-hmm. That sounds a lot like the record. I'm gonna have a band when I tour for the first time.
Wow.
So that'll be really amazing.
Yeah.
Totally have no idea what that's
how
gonna
is
be
that
like.
Yeah, like have you had rehearsals for that yet?
Nope. Not yet. Not
do
even
do you know the musicians?
Yes, I do. They're all wonderful. I mean, I feel like if I get sharp, talented people,
it'll be great,
and put them in a room together, it's gonna be whatever it is, it's gonna be cool.
Yeah.
I have been doing like I did this version of Everything Is Happening Today with the String Orchestra of Brooklyn last night. That's a totally different version.
Wow. I love that song.
Oh, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So good.
I did a version of a handful of songs from the record with my buddy Thor. He has an amazing band called Thorn Friends that's putting out a record really soon, and he lives in Austin, and he's sort of just like a very notorious and highly regarded cult figure amongst musicians in the know. He's played drums and God knows what else with a whole handful of luminaries across the world. And I went and hung out at his house a few weeks ago and re-recorded some of these songs with his band. And that was like marimbas and vibraphones and pedal steel and strings and you know, so those are very different versions. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I'm most excited about is I have to be extra aware, I feel like, of how people interpret or like potentially misinterpret what this record is trying to be. I think, you know, because of what I do with Y Oak and because this is a solo project, I think a lot of people have a tendency of being like, oh, she made a synth pop solo record. And maybe this project sort of started out that way, but this is very much not what this record has become. And so it's been fun for me to play around with creating these really different, sometimes extremely organic versions of these songs, just to kind of prove to myself and others that these songs, first and foremost, it's about the songs,
right?
And not necessarily those songs can exist
in different with different forms. Productions.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us about Semaphore?
Yes,
because I looked it up. This is the single that's out, and there's an incredible video. I don't know if it's stop motion. It's like a mixture of stop motion and animation.
It
and
is.
It's super cool colorful and beautiful, and like it's awesome.
My bandmate's very talented wife and Ashley North Compton made that video with our good friend Michael Leary, and she's amazing.
It's really so fun. Cool. I looked up the word semaphore, and I could barely. I knew what the words meant, but I could barely understand, like, even But what did I write down? Computer science term to describe how many units of a given resource are available?
That is one thing, but that is not what that song... Actually,
okay, so it's a song about communication over great distances, both literal physical distance and the infinite space that exists between even the closest of people.
Yes. Oh. So semaphore, there's a different definition for the word. It's also flag semaphore, which is actually a nautical term.
I saw flag semaphore. I thought it's not that.
It is. It super is. So flag semaphore is like when people are on two ships that are really far away and they're communicating by holding the flags in different positions.
I like that.
So that I actually learned that word and wrote that song on the same day. So that was what it was.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
I was working on, you know, putting together like the initial like beat. I hadn't written anything to it yet. And I don't even remember where I saw the word. I was probably just doing some dumb internet distracting.
You're like, that is
myself.
A lyrical word.
And I was like, oh, I love that word. It
what
sounds
is the,
so good.
And then the lyric, I'm not,
too far
no,
gone
too
for
far
the
gone.
Semaphore, which just sounds to me like it just kind of.
Just like
was,
a lyric meant to be. So like I was waiting
was the,
for a
that
song.
Line yeah. popped right into my head and I wrote the whole song in like an hour.
Amazing.
Less than an hour probably because, you know, that magical experience where a just song just falls in your lap happens. It's probably happened to me. You know, certainly fewer than 10 times in my life. It's total magic.
What do you do when that, when you're like, when you finish and you're like, this
girl.
Is a song.
This is why it is like good that around? I live alone because I freak out. I'm telling you, if you could play a video.
No, I know. Like,
in those moments, it is.
Euphoria.
I look like
just like march around your house.
Absolute maniac.
And
yeah.
So, jump on furniture.
There is a way where it's like, no, I know that this is good. Like, I'm sorry to say, but like, I just,
yeah,
it's like
that's
really
that's
amazing.
That's
and that's a beautiful
feeling.
Thing. There's
it's
nothing
amazing.
Wrong with that. I mean, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's all you have
you know,
to
people
go
are
by.
Like, oh, I cannot, you know, you can never tell if something's going to hit. And that's true. But yeah. Like, you know, when you've created something special.
Well, here's how I feel about that. When that happens and just this record and the music that I make in general, I don't believe in an objective good or like something that's going to, no matter what you create, it is not going to resonate with everyone because that is not how human beings work. So that's a completely separate thing. I know my record is good. That doesn't mean that I think that everyone will like it or everyone should like it. It's just I believe in it and it resonates so much with me. And that's the step that I think when you're looking outside of yourself to try and please other people, it's so easy to go astray. But with every question and every step of the way, you're just like, what do I most want to hear from this?
Yep.
You have to trust that if you please yourself, some other people will also relate to it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it.
That's all you have.
The only times I've thought myself into a hole or into a corner with this stuff is when I'm too worried about what other people think about what I'm doing. If I'm too obsessed with trying to please everybody, which is literally impossible, then nothing comes from that.
If you get that gut feeling when you finish something and you're like, this is amazing, that's all you have to go on.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And that is when that happens, It is, I mean, I do. It is the greatest feeling that there is. And I turn into an absolute maniac. And I just yell and scream and run around and squeal and jump up and down. And
then do you chase that? Like, how long? Like,
and then I like listen to it for like, like 30 times a day for a week. And then I'm like, all right, I don't need to leave. But it is.
And
it
then
is
it gives you more confidence that, like, I can do this. This is, it hasn't gone away. This magic will return.
It, you know, there's such huge dry spells in between those moments. That it is, it's almost like the second you you finally like realize that, oh, you accept the fact that you may never make another thing for as long as you live, and then the next day it's just like bam, there you go, and it's really something. I mean, there's no feeling like it. In fact, one of the songs that I want to play for you guys later is about, in some ways, like that brain battle that's always happening for me of like, there's the side of my brain that's very rational and like. Truly believes that, you know, my existence is sort of ultimately small and meaningless, and like it's no more important or less important than anyone else's, and there's no like mystical figure that's kind of pulling the strings, and but then there's this other side of me that like kind of believes in like real actual magic. And I know that it's just a story that I'm telling myself, but those moments when I feel, when something like that happens, where a song just kind of materializes from space, and I just have, I really have no idea where that
it's
comes
like a divine
from.
It is, feeling.
It feels so much like magic that I want to believe in it.
Yeah,
and I don't really see the harm of believing in it. And I have having this kind of narrative that I create for my life that makes it feel like it's unfolding in a way that's meaningful. But knowing at the same time that I'm full of shit, and that it's just
I think that
a story.
Keeps you humble. That's the humble
that's
part.
A good duality.
That's the right.
It's it's
the speck of dust and the what's the other, you know?
A piece of glitter.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Everything that's come out of her is so beautiful.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
So Flock of Dimes, If You See Me, Say Yes, out on September 23rd. Ooh, what are you going to play for us today?
Well, I was, you know, I can play whatever you want, really, but I can play a couple songs. I was thinking I'd play Everything Is Happening today.
Awesome.
And also a song that has not yet been released. Maybe it will by the time this airs, but has not yet. It's called The Joke.
Cool. All right, let's do it. Thanks, Jen.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. I wake up. My eyes are playing tricks on me. And through the dust, so much of my life has already come to be. So I watch the sun go up and I watch the sun go down, and the horizon hovering like a missing piece that can never be found. And as the seasons lie in wait like a secret you already know, winter is behind us now, it is ahead of us also. And everything that ever was is happening today. Everything I've ever done is happening the wrong way.
Joy, it is the infinite light, but the limits of words were with So I give my longing a name and I hold its hand and take a walk in everything that ever was. It's happening today. Everything I've ever done, it's happening the wrong way. Pull the thread.
Ooh.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.